Welcome to the Intuitive Awakening Podcast. I'm your host, Deanna Riddick. I'm an author, teacher, and eternal seeker of truth. I am on a mission to spread metaphysical knowledge to help you awaken your spirit. If you want to learn how to open the door to your divine self, you are in the right place. Thank you for joining me for today's episode. We have a lovely guest today, Joan Ranquette, and I hope I'm pronouncing your last name correctly.
Yes.
Joan is an accomplished animal communicator for over 30 years. She's an author, a speaker, an educator, and animal guardian. Her hands-on animal communication and energy healing allows her to troubleshoot behavioral and medical issues, stimulate healing, and deepen her clients' ability to care for and understand their animals. Joan believes the capacity to attune to animals and work with them energetically is not a gift for a select few, but an innate ability we can all access with guidance. She teaches down-to-earth skills that enable her students to communicate consistently and confidently with animals. So Joan, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so excited, you know, to hear your story and how you started communicating with animals. And when did you know you actually could communicate with them?
So I grew up with, I think horse was the very first word I said, and not mom or dad. Oh, and also I always joke that I was raised as a small lap dog, because if you look at every picture of my family, my dad always had me and a little dog on his lap. So I was always with the little dog. You know, I always felt very connected to animals. And later on in life, and I had horses growing up, and then I got a horse as an adult. And that horse was really very much like a spiritual teacher for me, because what had happened was in 1986, my sister died. And probably a year and a half later, I ended up with this horse. And she was very, she was just so much energy. And if I really learned quickly, like if I didn't focus my own energy, if my mind drifted, she was like my greatest mindfulness teacher. She was, you know, quick to react or to, you know, to buck or to spook or to do things that put me back into staying focused and in the moment. And I really learned a lot about being in the moment. I was, you know, grieving, but also studying mindfulness and reading all sorts of spiritual texts and things. But she was the real teacher. She was the one that got me doing that work. At the barn that I boarded at, my the barn manager had arranged for us to have an animal communicator come out. And so I, of course, signed up, and I was so excited to talk to my horse. And what it did for me was it really confirmed and affirmed everything that I thought was true about our relationship and about who she was in my life. And after the animal communicator would leave, I would feel so connected to my horse. And that happened a few times. And I actually, then I lost that horse. And I had another horse who I still have. And she's 36. So that just tells you how long we've been together. she was laying. She had you couldn't see it, but there was something wrong. And I went to find the animal communicator's phone number to have her out, and I couldn't find it. And the next day, I'm desperate because the x-rays aren't showing anything wrong. You know, I was going to do an MRI. I want this animal communicator. I can't find her phone number. And the next day, here's a class. Someone was teaching a class on animal communication. So I went to the class, and I started studying, and, you know, the horse got me into it, but we started communicating with all animals, dogs, cats, even guinea pigs, and you name it. It was very, very fun. And I was really in love with communicating with the animals. I wasn't necessarily able right away to help myself with my own horse. That was a whole other journey into body work and energy healing. But it was fun, and I wanted to do it for myself and my own animals, but I ended up getting good at it. And people started asking for my help, and it was like lighting hay on fire. Everybody, you know, it's just like, boom, all of a sudden I'm talking to this dog, I'm talking to that dog, and I'm talking to this horse and this chicken and this guinea pig. And yeah, my career kind of took off.
So when you were communicating with these animals, how were you receiving, I guess, the messages? Like, what were the impressions? Were they visuals? Was it just like the knowing? How are you getting the animal messages?
Okay. So it's, I always say that I do telepathy, but I also like to say that that isn't an action verb. So I'll break it down. So telepathic communication is the transference of pictures, words, and feelings. And so that's why I say it's not an action verb. We're doing it all the time. We're moving, breathing broadcasters. So we're sending and receiving information at all times. I mean, you know that. Sorry about that. You know how that is, being, you know, intuitive. And so what happens is we get quiet enough that, you know, one of the first steps is to get quiet. And then it's communicating and receiving the information from the animal. And that comes in pictures, words, and feelings. And what a lot of people don't realize is that when you're doing this, you can't, you're, when you first start doing this, you recognize that you are actually sending messages all the time, and often we're sending really mixed messages. So what ends up happening as a result of learning animal communication and learning telepathy is that we become better senders, because we don't realize that we accidentally are sending mixed messages. You know, a lot of times we'll think about a behavior, for example, I don't want my dog to bark at that neighbor, and we're sending the picture, bark at the neighbor. So then what happens when the neighbor comes by? The dog barks at the neighbor. So, you know, they don't distinguish between do and don't in the mind. They just see the picture of the thing that you don't want. And so, you know, this is part of how we get some crazy, kooky behaviors, or certainly how behaviors get compounded.
Well, that's very interesting that you say that, because usually, yes, when we're, you know, we have our cats or dogs or our household pets, and they're doing something that is bothersome, you know, our first, I think, first thing that we do is say, don't do that,
yes.
Don't do that, you know, and it always seems like things go awry or they do what we don't want them to do. So I think it's very interesting. You're saying that they don't distinguish between, you know, do and don't.
Yeah, they didn't go to grammar school. and the other piece of that is that I use this in my first book. So let's imagine that a cat, you just bought this new beautiful rug, and for whatever reason, the cat was stressed and accidentally peed there. And now you are cleaning the rug and you're upset, and you're picturing the cat peeing on the rug, and then you're more upset. And so for the cat sees, oh, she's upset, I want to help her. Oh, and she keeps picturing peeing on the rug, right? So our emotions compound all of the things. So if we're like, oh my God, so frustrated about barking or this or that, you know, we're just amping it up.
So then how do we kind of change that behavior then with the animals? Like, what type of messages would we send? How would we change the messaging then?
Well, I mean, I've gone as far as making songs about stuff like there's the neighbor, but I like to picture the outcome that I want, right? And I start I start with myself, right? Like I want my dog to not lunge on the leash. So instead of thinking about that, I think about my dog very peacefully walking by. And I mean, I do a lot of other things if it's a serious issue, but it's certainly some of the smaller things. I would start with picturing the outcome I want. When it comes to bigger, deeper emotional things that, you know, where the behavior is pretty entrenched, if you will, EFT, Emotional Freedom Technique, which I just wrote a book about and it's coming out. So Emotional Freedom Technique is really powerful for animals to get them to start. So the emotion comes down from the animal about why they're doing that. And then the emotion comes down from us about our feelings about their behavior.
So what exactly is that technique, and how does it help them?
So Emotional Freedom Technique is, or EFT tapping, mm-hmm. is tapping on acupressure points that are connected to meridians. And each of those meridians are connected to organs. And in Chinese medicine, each organ has an emotion. And the points that are chosen, that were chosen by the guy that created Emotional Freedom Technique, the points are each very calming points, calming to the animal. So what happens is we tell kind of a tough story. So let's say the dog that's barking at the neighbor, and it isn't just a random barking, like the dog really goes off about the neighbor. Let's say the name, you know, you use animal communication, find out, or you can suspect that something had happened, find out what had happened in the past with a guy with a hat or whatever it is. And then you tell the tough story, if you will, while tapping on these feel-good points. And as you start to, you know, you're starting to take the triggers down. The animal and the person won't forget. It's not like hypnotherapy where we're almost going to replace it with a new story. But you're not going to be as triggered. And so it calms the nervous system, and it brings about a certain peace and acceptance of, you know, the world around. And when that calming comes, all of us can make better choices.
Exactly. We definitely can. So with the tapping on those certain areas, are you just tapping until you start to see the change or the animal calming? Is there a certain number of taps or?
That's a great question. Yes and no. So yes, I'm going to look for things that help me see that the animal is starting to release. So for example, when an animal is processing and releasing, you know, their eyes might soften, or they start licking and chewing, or they, you know, you can just kind of feel their nervous system just drop. They might pass gas. They might go to sleep, or they might just really calm down in a way where you just know that you've gone deep. And then there's other animals, kind of like people, that might resist the change. I love my horse that's 36 that got me into my first horse got not my first horse, but a first adult horse got me into the animal communication. But this horse got me into all things body work and energy healing. Anyway, she is really stoic, and she doesn't want anyone to know how she feels. So I have people, when they come to workshops here, tap on her, because she literally will purse her lips like, you're not getting through to me. And then she'll like turn away as if nobody can see, and yawns over, you know, looking the other direction. So, you know, animals can be stoic too. So at a certain point, you almost have to rely on yourself, like internal indicators, or trust the process to know, or intuition, that word, that's where you really use your intuition to know that, like, even though there's no outward sign that this animal is starting to process and release, I'm going to trust and I'm going to move on or stop here or, you know, but if you also see that they're not releasing on certain things, I like to stay on that emotion. Like, I'm sad. I'm sad. I'll keep tapping like all the points repeatedly and really get the release I want. So, you know, there isn't a specific amount of anything, but you have to feel it, if that makes sense.
So does this work also for, I know you said animals like in distress, but what if they are depressed? Because our animals do get depressed.
Absolutely.
And I think, you know, a lot of people talk about that, but how do you find that tapping is more effective or energy healing is more effective for animals?
I think of tapping as an energetic body work that also involves animal communication. Because even if you're not an animal communicator, and let's say two cats are fighting, right? And you know that the one got kind of beat up, and that one maybe is the one that started it, and suddenly it's kind of listless. So, and it's depressed, right? So you might start the tapping on, you know, that other cat's such a jerk, and, you know, and help the animal express the experience up until the cat got beat up. And then you start to be like, but I forgive him. I release this. I'm going to be fine. We're going to be buddies again. The reason it's so powerful, in addition to calming the nervous system down, is they're getting their story off their chest, right? Mm-hmm. They're getting the story expressed. And whenever we feel heard, that's the first step of healing.
Right. Wow. Do you find when you're doing, let's say, something like energy healing, even with animals, like how receptive are they initially? I know you talked about your horse being a little bit resistant, you know, but with other animals, have you experienced even more resistance, or does it take a while to get that animal to be like, okay, I'll accept your whatever type of energy healing it is that you do?
Most animals absolutely love it. My horse is resistant so that I get really good at stuff.
Oh my gosh. That's incredibly sweet. So I know you said earlier that you work with all different types of animals, obviously way beyond like the household pets. So do you have any strange stories of just animals that you were first starting to, I don't know, to meet and greet, or, you know, extend into a different like kingdom, and strange experiences?
I have some really cool experiences. So years ago, I used to take people on dolphin trips down in Bimini in the Bahamas. And so the first trip I went on, I didn't know what to expect. And I had this group, and I, you know, we lived on this kind of live aboard boat for diving, but we just snorkeled the whole time. And so I was nervous going on this trip, right? Like, because who am I? I've never done this before. I've got 14 people signed up. What are we going to do, right? Yeah. So again, I really kind of practiced the outcome in my mind that like we'd have these incredible encounters. And so so this one day we're out there swimming with the dolphins, and you know, we're not allowed to touch them, none of that. And I had this experience where this dolphin came up to me with a little piece of seaweed and tried to engage me in play. And so she kept tossing it, and then I would catch it and I would throw it back, and then it would land on her fin. And this exchange went back and forth. I didn't know we were being photographed. So I've actually got the photographs with this. And so then she literally spun me around three times. And I mean, I was like so disoriented. And when I came to, I didn't see the other people I was with. I was all of a sudden in the middle of a pod of dolphins. And I always joked that that was my dolphin initiation. And I, you know, again, the whole thing was photographed. So I have, the photos are on my wall in my classroom. And so they had, you know, in science, you're not supposed to name wildlife, but they had named her Sushi, because she had a little chunk out of her peck. So every year then, so I would do, you know, 1 week I'd have a group and then I'd stay there for 2 days and another group would come in. So every year we made up this stupid Sushi song and we would sing it. And Sushi would come. I've got videos year after year of like singing the song and then all of a sudden hearing the captain going, "You're not going to believe it." I'm like, "Yeah, I believe it." So we called Sushi in every year. And it was so magical, you know, to have that sort of an experience. I've never really told that story as something. I mean, that's and then, so then this last year, now I take people more on wildlife trips. I want to get back to my favorite pod, but so this last year, I was in Kenya, and there's a place called the Shelter Trust where they have orphan elephants. And so I take people always the first day we get there in Nairobi. My cat is singing the song people or something. Anyway, I know, Henry, thank you. I know you want to be on the podcast. So anyway, so I take people to the Shelter Trust and we meet the baby orphans. And these orphans are like, you know, something terrible has happened to them. They've lost their mother. This last year, there was such a terrible drought. Maybe their mothers are victims of poaching. Some of them have fallen down a well, you know, all sorts of things. But it's the most joyful, beautiful place, even with all this tragedy, right? So, and these guys sleep with them because elephants are very social. So when they get to, like, they stay at this nursery, they call it, for about 2 years, sometimes 4 years. And then they move to the next phase, which is a camp called Atumba Camp. And it's down in a national park called Tsavo East. And at Atumba Camp, these juveniles are anywhere from like 4 to 12, 15, maybe the oldest. And they're still, so they're not sleeping in little bedrooms with a person hugging them and their blanket. They're sleeping more in like, there's probably like 5 different like paddocks that they come into at night and get, you know, secured in. And there's, you know, the group that's most, and eventually they walk around and eventually they get to know the wild herds and eventually they kind of migrate off with the wild herds, right? So that's how they rewild these elephants. And there's, you know, the advanced group, the group that's going to be out, you know, out the door sooner, and then the group that just came in, and everything in the middle. So also on all of my trips, we adopt part of the money that we, the price of the trip, we adopt an animal or something for you in advance, right? And it's kind of a lottery, right? I just send in like, all right, there's 12 people, myself included, so everybody got an email one day that the elephant that was adopted for them. So I got this elephant, Ambo, and I didn't know who Ambo was, and I didn't even read his story. I just was like, oh, Ambo. So as we were approaching the Sheldrick Trust, the Atumba Camp place, I just, in my mind, I was like, Ambo, 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 I'm coming to see you. I'm coming to see you. And so I get there and Ambo kind of came right up to me. We were there for 3 days and we saw them at 6 a.m. when they were having breakfast, going out for their day. We'd meet them at lunch, and then we'd see them at 5 p.m. as they were coming back to their camp. And every time, I've got a million pictures of it. I wish I had a picture here in my office, because I have a picture of me just standing with him hanging out. But he would be the first one in and the last one to leave. Like, there'd be no other elephants, and I'm standing there scratching his butt. And he didn't care. And it was like, it reminded me so much of that unique thing with Sushi, the dolphin, that, like, I can never explain enough how special, like, the word special doesn't even, there isn't enough frequency in that world, in that word. It's so big, right? But it's so special that these animals, you know, choose us and choose to hang out with us. I mean, I think of all the dolphins we swam with, you know, there's an ocean. We're in the ocean, and they choose to come play with us. So those, to me, are some of my favorite things.
And they're definitely very special. And I love the dolphin stories. I think they're just incredible animals anyway. Yeah. And, you know, the elephants, I think that was very sweet that, you know, it's like they knew.
Yeah. Being new.
Yeah.
Oh my God. Yeah. I mean, I told the guy, Benjamin, who's, if you've ever watched the Sheldrick Trust, you'll see Benjamin a lot. And if you follow them on social media, he's always the expert. And, you know, I told him, watch out. I am coming back. You take good care of my Ambo. And, you know, don't be surprised if I call you every day to check on him, but I haven't been that weird, but it's tempting because he's sweet is the exact word for Ambo.
Oh, so then what experience do you have working with animals that are really in transition, that are about to transition, you know, to the afterlife?
I have a lot. I did a TEDx talk called the Rainbow Bridge, Animals in Transition. And it's and I just let go of one of my cats in March. So it's, I've had a lot. Because in fact, that very first adult horse I was talking about, part of what really propelled me into this work, you know, first I was learning this for fun, but then it you know, kind of took over my life. And I wanted to learn it for fun, and I wanted to be able to help my own animals. And losing that horse was, you know, a big part of what put me here on the map with this work. So I've had a lot of experience, and I love to help people. And I have a whole class, you know, for my students that are in my big program, to learn how to help clients through each stage of that. I just taught a class called Animals in Transition Fundamentals. And I taught, because all these people kind of want to be like, the new hip term is death doula. So
yes.
Want to be, and I'm like, all right, it's a midwife. But anyway, and I've always said that, like, I've been a midwife for people and animals, and it's one of the most sacred things you could do. And so the class that I just taught, Animals in Transition Fundamentals, is all for people to have tools. I mean, we start to heal our own wounds around it, right? Our past, so that we can be really present for the animals then in our future and in our present moment. And then we can help others. So we can help people through the animal communication create a bucket list. We can help people through the animal communication with memorializing. Another energy technique that I teach called the scalar wave, we can help animals that are in pain. And then the EFT, we can help the people and the animals with any grief or resistance or fear around it. So it's really a full, very full package of what we're offering in the school. And yeah, it's, I think we don't talk enough about death here as a culture. And it's, I think, one of the more profound ways that we can really help people.
Definitely. So when you're working with animals that are in the state of transition, do you, I mean, I'm making an assumption here that there's hands-on work and a lot of, you know, speaking with them. I could be wrong, but do you ever receive like telepathic messages or visualizations of, I don't know, them showing you like their sentiments when they're about to leave, pictures of the other side, what it looks like for the animal afterlife? I think a lot of people have questions about, well, where are my animals going? You know, like, do they have the fear of leaving?
Sometimes, you know, it's interesting because in the kind of new age, we love to like, oh, animals don't fear death. And it's like, that's just not true. Why would a bunny scream when it's being, you know, attacked? Like, there, it's individual. There are some animals that came here and their souls are far more advanced and maybe they are more accepting. But of course they have fear, they have anxiety around the pain, right? And then as they transition, they really move into such a state of love. And the biggest thing that I can say about all the animals that I've communicated with from the other side is that there's love and ease. And often when you finally do get a visitation, you get a visitation of somebody who's in their strong body and their youth and their, you know, their vibrancy. So it's interesting because I've been divorced a long time, but my ex-husband just passed in April. And I was like, I know he's going to come visit me, right? I didn't know what that would be like. And I didn't expect it, but I just kind of knew it as a passing thought. Well, I had this dream the other night that was so vivid. And then I got up to go to the bathroom and I came back and I was still back in it. And it was him. And I thought the reason I knew it was a visitation the next day versus just a dream was, first of all, the things he said and the fact that he had hair.
Yeah,
that's David. So anyway, it's they will come to us in the way, you know, like out of the glance of an eye, they might, you know, where they used to sit on the couch or things like that. But then they also will come fully vibrant. So if, like, for example, my cat that just passed had a tumor that kind of distorted her face at the very end. And she was the most beautiful cat you've ever seen. And so, you know, when I see her, when she has visited me, she is even more beautiful, right? So that they come back like 10 times what they were. So.
And how often do you think they visit? Because I've had, you know, pets who passed and then I dream them. Like, it might be in the, you know, maybe 6 months later, I might dream seeing like two animals that passed together and we're all hanging out and it's an amazing dream. And I'm like, okay, they're doing fine. I'm glad. How often, you know, do you think they visit their owners?
I think it just depends. I mean, sometimes they reincarnate and are back in your house before you know it. But sometimes I think it really depends on the connection that that you had. I know that the often the grief is the connection at first, right? Yeah. And sometimes we don't let go of the grief because we're afraid we aren't going to be connected to them. But the more we move into the grief, the faster that true connection can come. And often guilt is such a huge piece that when we start to collapse that, then the grief is more pure and we have that pure connection. So we can still be grieving and connecting, but we often have to move through the guilt and we have to just be just available. And sometimes people want it so badly that, you know, it's the minute that they forget and are thinking about something else that the animal moves in.
Definitely. And you touched on something I'm very curious about because, again, and it's probably because I am not familiar with a lot of literature, but this whole concept of animal reincarnation, I think, you know, especially, you know, something that you kind of alluded to earlier, like, so yes, in New Age theory and even outside of that, you know, we have a tendency to, of course, accept the beliefs of reincarnation for soul growth. But does that apply to animals as well for soul growth?
Absolutely. And I mean, they have their own souls, their own wounding, their own karma, their own trajectory, their own healing, their own, you know, thing. And I believe that we come back and forth as all sorts of things. Like, so mm-hmm. I was just in India and I took people on a tiger trip. And, you know, that in Hinduism and Buddhism, they believe that we have 108 million reincarnations. And so if you have that many reincarnations before you're going to reach nirvana, wouldn't it make sense to just come back a bunch as a fly? Like you get one day.
That's so true. Yes. Oh, that's very true.
So I think we transmigrate through different things. Like I know, I always joke that I'm half border collie and half thoroughbred, and I've got 5 planets in Leo, so I'm all cat. But I know, when I think of a lifetime as a border collie, I can even smell the dirt, right? Like I can smell, I know what that life was like. And same with being a horse. And so I think that we move through a lot of things. I always joke that I'm going to write a book one day called My Aunt, Your Dog. you know, it's...
Oh my gosh.
But it's really, you know, I believe that just like with people, we migrate back into each other's lives. You know, that we just have our soul family. And one of the ways that you can really see that is, let's say you were somebody that was interested in fostering dogs just because you love dogs, and you might foster a dog that was easy for you to place in another home because it wasn't meant to be there. And then you foster the next dog and you're the epic foster fail, right? Like, I can't let go of this dog. It's because it's meant to be there. It's part of your soul family that your soul recognizes, and they just have to stay.
Wow. Yeah, definitely. So have you worked closely with what we consider to be like predatorial animals? And if so, what are some of the, I guess I can say, common misconceptions about them? Things well, that we maybe would communicate, you know, or maybe they feel like they want to share to humans.
I have worked in a lot of wildlife sanctuaries with like the with hawks, with and I have coyotes. Like I live out in an open space and there's coyotes everywhere. And just 2 days ago, I was hiking with my dogs, and I have a place where I leash them up because we're going to kind of come into a neighborhood and, you know, I want to be respectful of other people's dogs. So I'm leashing my dogs up, and this coyote pops out of the bushes, like probably 20 feet away. And my dogs got all revved up, but I was able to calm my dogs down. And this coyote sassed at us like, "You stay out of my area." But I knew that that coyote had babies, you know? And mm-hmm. So I think that a lot of times what ends up happening is we've so taken over their lands that, yes. You know, they have no choice but to seem so scary and treacherous. And to be hunting in our backyards. They don't have the space anymore. So yeah, I've worked in a lot of sanctuaries. I've worked with lions. I've taken people to the white lions in South Africa, and you know, working with those majestic creatures is just so fantastic. And yeah, so there's, I mean, I think it's, what is interesting is our dogs and our cats, I always say that they could be predators until they're prey, meaning as long as they're older, as long as they're younger, they're kind of in the predatory zone, right? Like, you know, my dog chased a bunny just the moment I opened the door a little bit ago. And, you know, it's sometimes it's fun, but it comes out of, you know, that predator mode. So, you know, and that's just instinct. And a horse, on the other hand, you know, I have three horses and they're all prey. So, you know, they've got different fight or flight, right? Like their reaction is completely, you know, they've always got an awareness around them of what's going on. Am I safe? Whereas our animals that are predators, which our dogs and cats can be at any given moment, be a predator, have a different, they're looking for safety as well. But they have a different level of inner security when things are calm. So that's to me the difference.
Interesting. And you're completely right too. I think we forget as humans that a lot of the land that we live on, you know, we're coexisting with all types of creatures. And the more that we continue to build on the land and infringe on their territory, of course, they have no, you know, choice but to respond in a way that protects them.
Yeah, they have to.
Definitely. So, Joan, I have enjoyed this conversation, and I want to know if you have any classes, if you're taking people to all of these wonderful places, anything open, if anybody's interested in getting contact, you know, getting in touch with you or going, you know, traveling with you, how can they find you?
So I always have trips going, and like I have two spots left for a Zimbabwe trip in November, and then I have, I don't know why my thumb just did that.
I think today is a very strange electronic day.
I think so too.
Yes, everything crazy is going on.
Yeah, so I never do that. Anyway, so I've got a trip in the spring. Yeah, so I've always got wildlife trips, and I've always got classes going on. I've got animal communication, lots of things coming up. And my book, Emotional Freedom Technique for Animals. And so if you just go to my website, you'll find ways to work with me, learn with me, my books and my trips. And also I have a Facebook group called Learn to Communicate with Animals with Joan. And in there, I do a Facebook Live every Tuesday and we have some fun. So that's a great way to just start getting to know me and see if you want to work with me.
And if someone was interested in attending one of these trips with you, do they have to have previous experience?
No, I just like to know that you can get calm and you're not going to be like, oh my God, there's an elephant.
Yes. Yes, that is important. Well, I am so glad that you came on the show today. This is very informative to me, and I love animals, and I think you do amazing work. So again, thank you for being here and being on the show. And everybody, I will post her information up in the show description notes below. So thank you, Joan, so much.
Take care. Thank you. And I love what you do. So thank you.
Thank you.